Did you ask them or did you neck them?
Well, when you got sick of doing it one way, you'd do it another. To break the monotony and relieve the strain.
I tell the record, Bert, over 6,000 eggs or something.
In a day, for one blood, or a team.
Gang. Oh, yes.
You didn't have any particular preference. You just did it, you'd do it one way, then you'd do it the other way.
I tell you, one of strings.
Well, my preference was at the finish was to soldier a bag, you know.
How did you do that?
Well, that was going straight into the stack and just dropping it on your shoulder like that and carrying it over, and then you found that when you dropped the bag that it lay in its place, like, you know, you could lean that forward a little bit and you could drop the bag, and it was nothing worse than having to get all of it by the ears and straighten it up. Yeah. Like that. Your time you'd done that, you'd have another sling.
So
you'd carry it like a kid or something over one shoulder, you know.
Like a shoulder,
you know,
yeah.
In the middle, like a
seesaw. Like there's one across the shoulders.
Yeah, that's
there's one across the back. But I found if you went straight into the stack and grabbed the bag like that and just tipped it onto your shoulder and balanced it like a piece of timber, you know.
How long might you have to walk with a bag of wheat on you? I mean, from the hook to the stack.
Well, 30 bags, 25 bags long, which would be, I suppose you'd be looking around about 30 feet or something like that, easily 30
feet. Well, each bag is about 3 feet long, so if you had 30, that'd be about 90 feet, wouldn't it, 30
yards? Yeah, you'd have a carry, you could carry.
Yeah, I see, and you're carrying over a floor made of bags.
Yes, when you're topping up, yes. You'd start off, you'd build your stack, and then you'd come out to practically the height of the stack, say about 5 or 6 bags high, then you go back and repeat the same thing again.
And would you be working, you know, under the square of the hatch, or under the hook? Mm. What do? You build that in too, and then work up. You don't have a big hole down the middle of the stack.
Oh no,
you build the stack right under the plumb of the hook.
Oh, I see. You start your stack.
Yeah.
You don't
start
out in
the wheat.
Oh, no.
The stack would be about this level.
That shoulder.
There'd be an argument about the little short asses. They'd say the stack's too high, and we'd say it's just right, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I see. So you'd start it there and then work backwards.
Yeah, well, then you went 25 bags back.
Yeah.
And you carried out the eye for the stack, 6 bags, say.
Yeah.
Well, you come in and you pulled it in.
And
well, then the blokes was putting them on your back, the two blokes on the stack, they'd restart building the stack again. And the main thing was to keep a level floor. You'd have it like this, because you had to walk on it. You could break it.
So, and how much did a bag of wheat, a bag of flour?
150 pounds.
How much did a bag of wheat?
Wheat was very heavy.
Wheat,
you'd be looking about the 200-pound mark with wheat.
And there'd be old blokes, and you know, in a gang, a normal gang, you'd have a variety of age groups. Would you? You'd have older and younger blokes.
Oh yes, that's right.
And so you and you're all expected to carry out your keep up with the hook.
Well, on a job like that, you'd usually find that it wasn't so bad on the wharf, and you'd leave the old members on the wharf.
Deck, perhaps.
Or on the deck, yeah, slinging on the wharf, which was hard, because they had to be trucked out of a truck, and they had to be slung. You always seemed to get the breakdown below, but it was always better to leave the older chap on the wharf, where he had a stable footing, you know.
Yeah, touched
the bag. That's right. They had it down, but you couldn't expect a young bloke to go down below, stay on the wharf, and let an older fella go down where there was pitfalls of walking, you know, which could, unnatural walking over flour. You could affect, you see a lot of these fellas that lumped, they've got a limp, they're somewhere their back's gone, you know, and they probably, if they'd have walked over a straight flat floor all the time, they wouldn't have it. But all of a sudden that weight would go into one spot, like, you know.
Who would organise that?
Some would take their boots off and work in the bare feet.
Who would organise that? Would that be the gang leader?
Oh, amongst the gangs.
Or more or less just a question of consensus, you'd more or less...
There'd be no organisation.
Yeah.
No,
automatically done. That was the spirit, you know, of that type of thing.
Some fellas would warp only, you never took them off the warp.
No, that's right. I worked mostly down below all the time.
Now look, we were just getting onto this double dumping thing. Now, how was that campaign run? I mean, was this just a question of people in one hole would jack up, or did it become a general union principle? I mean, how did these sort of campaigns run, for instance?
Well, I think in myself that it's not only started on the wharf, it started in all these wool stores. where these fellows were trucking wool all day, they just couldn't do it.
It was too heavy. They were storming and packers.
Storming and packers, yeah. And they found that the putting the two bales together and squeezing the two bales together.
They were dead.
There's no movement in them.
You couldn't manipulate them around.
Sometimes to turn them over, you'd have to put a glut, a piece of wood underneath, when you got it over, so that it'd be half
tipped.
Like a lever,
you know. And this is where of course those fellas complained, but they were handling it all the time in the wool stores and that. But on the wharf, like in the ship, you get into a tween deck, and some of them had to be trucked or rolled. It didn't matter, labour wouldn't compensate you for it, money wouldn't compensate you for it. It was just sheer skull, it was just bullocking, you know. The conditions were just that bad, you know.
Why did they bring that in?
If you had one man that wasn't pulling his weight, you had to make him pull it, didn't you? Because it'd kill you. Remember the bloke which used to walk on the bloody ice sticks of a Russian?
I was delegate on the
I was delegate on a job one day, and the bludger was screaming and going on, you know. They were topping up wall.
Yeah.
And when I went down below to the job, they said, he's not lifting the bloody ouch, you know. Yeah. And he was killing the others.
You've
got fellas, if they didn't pull their weight in that type of job, everybody had to pull their weight in it because it'd kill you, wouldn't it?
How long did it go on for, the double dump dispute? Do you remember?
Oh, it went on for quite a while.
It was put on a national basis.
Now, was this during the war or after the war?
No, this was during the war.
During the war. I remember the double dump dispute very vaguely.
Yeah.
And it was a very long dispute.
Who was behind it? The wool stores?
The wool stores swung in behind us. The storemen and packers, their fellas, as Bert said, took it up because it was bloody killing them.
Yeah.
And the carters and drivers, everybody got involved in it. But it really started with Ely.
Why did they go in for double dumps at all? I mean, this was obviously
space savers.
Well, Mendy, you'd be looking at it this way. If they got eight single bales with the snotters on going in, and they could get six double dumps going in. They got 12 single bales going in.
They were more compressed.
Oh, yeah,
they
were the two put together.
With metal straps.
Metal wires.
Yeah.
And the bloody things used to break on you. And they were dangerous, wasn't they?
And so the big wool exporting companies devised this as a way of getting more wool into a ship, was it?
That's right, yeah.
Space savers. More tonnage.
And it was some time before you were able to beat it.
It took a lot of beating.
We never got anything.
It cost the waterside workers a lot of money in wages, lost wages and time, to try and to defeat something that should never ever arisen, you know.
They never came to the party willingly, did they, Bert? You know, you always had to battle with them.
Well, I can always remember Jim Ely, saying, whatever you can get in the way of conditions of the waterfront, take them, because they'll never be given to you. Or whatever you can get, you know what I mean, in that respect, in the way of conditions. And when you look around today and you see the way they're just rubbishing them, you know, fellas that have worked there. Soul case out for and sacrificed a lot. It's unreal, you know. It's unbelievable, really.
Yeah. Well, so this. And did you notice? I've often noticed with wharfies, they seem to be more. I mean, even if they're not politically interested very much, they seem to be much more union conscious than most other workers. And I had the feeling it's because they all worked in little groups on their own in a ship's hold, and they often had to, and they all had different things being put over them, and they had to be much more active in their own defence. I mean, you know, it wasn't, might be just something happening to you wasn't happening in the next hold.
Well, now the difference was that with the waterside workers, they were a common body. They all done the same thing. You weren't in a place where there was the blacksmiths had their union, the plumbers had their union, and they were all divided. And one would say, oh, well, what they're doing doesn't interfere with us. If they want to go and do that, let them go and do it. But on the waterfront, it involvement was everybody. It never just Tom, Dick or Harry. It involved everybody.
So
it concerned everybody. That's correct, yes. And it concerned everybody. And these people, like, when there was was put to them and was put to the union about different issues, they were 100% behind it, because they knew that they weren't, it wasn't just something ridiculous, that it was warranted, like, in the way of the double dumps, like, had to be fought, the issue had to be fought out. And it did involve everybody.
And would you be likely to call, I mean, that was the sort of thing you could call lightning strikes over. What was the Double Dump campaign? How was it run, Don? Was it...
Oh, it was stacked on in Sydney, and then it switched from Melbourne to Sydney.
But would it have, did you go on a long, because you weren't having long strikes.
No,
you were having short, sharp...
You'd just you'd probably bail a shipper, you see, and stop the ship.
Well, you was only...
Push the Double Dumps out and wouldn't load them, and things like that.
You were only hoping that with the protest you were voicing, that they might be eliminated. But it became that big an issue by the people that put it on, the greedy ones, I mean, that there was no opening on that. And the only way you could get out was to put a complete ban on them. And that involved everybody. And that was the last solution.
This question about how we work, Bert, people have asked me, well, why did you stop on them? Why didn't you go into some other industry?
The reason why I stayed on the waterfront, there was might have a lot of things that didn't suit me, but that could have been just the same anywhere else.
And it's a different atmosphere.
And the variety of the work that appealed to me,
and
the atmosphere and the comradeship. And
it's a certain amount of freedom, even though
it's restricted. That's right, yes. And they say, oh yeah, you could have gone here and you could have gone and done that. But I was uneducated. I never had a trade. I come up through the years when everybody got kicked around and things like that. I went through the soup kitchens and things like that. And the waterfront appealed to me. And it was I just found that I was only a labourer, and it was a labouring job. And I just couldn't say, well, where else could I go?
You wouldn't have wanted to go into a war factory, into industry.
No.
You couldn't work in a jam factory.
Oh no! I never had a job. I never had a real job till I went on the waterfront. I never earned a wage. That was all I ever knew. I never came out of a factory to go there. I never came up from a boilermakers or something like that. I was just
a
labourer.
Anyway, during the war, you couldn't if you wanted to, could you? Because you were manpower.
Well, that's right. You were
there. Once you got there, you were manpower.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Now look, tell me. You mentioned being a coalie. Now, we've interviewed two old coalies. One was Lou Albrecht, who was he's 85 or something. He's the oldest
top man still living.
We've got a lot of Lou. Yeah. He's going to be on telly with us sometime, rather. Yeah. And we've also got Tipo Hayes, who was a coalie.
Yeah.
He was pushing a wagon. What do you call it?
Yeah.
A trolley boy.
Yeah, on the basket.
On the basket. Now, tell us about coal when you were doing it then.
I never worked on the trolley or on the basket.
What did you do?
I was only trimming, like, you know.
What was that?
Well, at the gas house. You'd start there at 8 o'clock in the morning and you'd finish at 8 o'clock the next morning. And you'd have to clean the tween decks out where the grab couldn't go in.
They were on the grab.
See, they were grabbing there. They were running across the road, the gas works, and it reached the stage where... When they fill the ship up, of course, in the tween decks, the coal would fill into the tween decks, and it had to be shovelled out.
Getting it when you're clearing it out, and they
and you'd throw it into the lower hold, like where the grab could get at it, like,
oh,
you know.
I see. Tell us how the grabs worked. We haven't got anything about that. What were they like? I mean, what was it? Was it on a gantry? No, we haven't
done
any grabs.
Well, like just down there at about 9 North Wharf. They had these cranes with the grabs on them, and a ship would come in, and they'd probably only pick up just a few members, like, you know, when it first started, just to clean up the decks or something like that. And then, when the grabs had reached a certain point where they couldn't get out of the wings, they'd pick up 20 or 30 men like, you know, and you'd go down with shovels and you'd throw it out from the wings, the sides of the ships, or in the after end or the forward end where the grab couldn't operate, and you'd throw it into a heap to where the grab could pick it up. And this was exactly the same in the tween decks, like, you know.
So that was what you were doing, was it?
Yeah.
What sort of a shovel do you use? One of those, not a digging,
square
not a
mouth.
One, the square one.
Square mouth.
The side, straight side.
That's
square.
Right, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I see. Did you have to have your own, or did they supply them?
Oh, no, they were there at the gangway, and you...
Yeah, well, things have changed when you had to carry your own shovels to work.
Yeah, well, that's when they done it on, I think the early one, they done it piecework, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yes.
On the baskets and that,
so
you know.
Oh,
yes,
very skilled.
Yeah. Of course, that was only done on bunkering, you know.
Yeah.
Ships of bunkers, like, you know.
Yeah, well, it was pretty skilled. So, and how much would a grab pick up at a time?
Super plus range was a similar thing.
How much would a grab
pick
up?
Oh, you'd be looking at about 5 or 6 ton at a lift.
Well, how much was it in a basket? Only half a ton, wasn't it?
Half a ton.
Four to a ton or something, yes, so
yeah.
I see it was much
quicker. Four to a
ton, they were. Oh, yeah, Wendy, but see, with the basket, they were only loading bunkers, you know.
How do you mean?
Well, they had a lighter with the coal in it.
Yeah.
And they'd have so many men in the lighter with the baskets,
yeah.
Probably about 8 or 10 men, and they'd fill the basket up, and they'd whip it up on a whip, like, you know, crane,
yeah.
Winch, and they'd land it on the trolley, and they'd run it from the lighter
into the ship.
Yeah. It was the ship's bunker, like,
yeah,
you know.
And they'd pick up trimmers for that also.
And was there ever,
yeah.
Oh, would they?
Yeah.
And was there much being, was the baskets and the crane sort of working at the same time? Were they were both in vogue when you were on, or had baskets entirely gone?
Oh, no, you're looking at, you only use the crane when you're discharging a coal.
No, when Bert came into the game, what's she saying, Bert, when you come into the game?
Yes.
No digging down then, was it?
No. Oh, like, they were just on the fringe of it.
Just on the fringe.
Yeah.
There probably be some in the lighter, wouldn't there, in the Roma?
Yes, yeah.
Where Lou Hall Press.
Yes, just on the edge.
But that was about the last of it, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
They were trimming those two ports and harbour ships, I forget the name of them now. Remember the old dredges used to go down?
Yes.
Hmm?
I just can't think of their names.
Yeah. Mapia Plinders.
Yeah.
Like
but on the whole, they changed it so most ships didn't bunker out, didn't. So the ships came to the coal wharf instead of.
They took the grabs to them. The period we're talking about now, around about the 1940s, oil was the thing.
Oh.
Coal had gone out.
I see.
The only thing that was getting bunkered was the odd ship that was still a coal.
Yeah, the last one I ever done was a ship that just got out of. A Dutch ship just got out of Java. At Port Melbourne. Yeah, and I got down below there, and old Nugget Carlton was down there, and Tom Collins,
one of the Collinses
were down there.
Bill or Jack, one of them.
Yeah, and old Nugget Carlton lived down there with half a dozen bottles of beer having a drink, and I come down, I wonder where I come from. So they showed me how to do it, and while I was doing it, they was having a little drink in the corner, you know.
You were doing the work.
and this was when you were trimming. You were trimming.
That's right,
I
yeah.
See. And when would that have been? Java, that was early in the war.
That's when the first of the Americans got here, like the first time.
After Pearl Harbor.
Yeah,
yes,
about 41, wasn't it?
Yeah,
about 41.
And that
yeah.
was when coal was really on its way out then. Coal
just about added. The last, yeah.
So the oil burning came in during the war?
Oh, yes.
Before. I know,
yeah.
The oil burning was sort of finished off during the war, I think.
Yeah,
that must have made a lot of difference to the look of the port, you know, because just the old colliers and the lighters pulling around the port must have, you know, been a totally different scene.
Oh,
so
the
yes.
Coal
works
at the south side when you come down the
yeah,
port.
Yeah, yeah. I worked the first... Coal, one of the first coal boats I worked was the first where the daylight saving came in.
Mm.
And we start 8 o'clock on the Saturday morning. The winches broke down. And we finished 8 o'clock on the Sunday morning. And during the night we had to pull it along by hand. Heave it up. All with a shorter, yeah. Because the section of the coal berth was full. We had to move it up a bit, like, you know. Yeah, so they're talking about pulling boats up the Yarra. It was a reality, like, you know. Oh, just lines and that, like, you know, because there was plenty of us to do, and it wasn't a very big ship, of course.
You get 100 men on a ship, a fair-sized ship, you know what you say, and you lean against that ship.
and you get it out from the wall.
Oh, by now, and men have been trapped.
Men have been trapped there, and everybody's got alongside the ship and put their back to it and kept the ship out while they've got the person out.
Yeah.
You can do that.
You can do that.
Gee.
You wouldn't credit it.
Have you done that?
Yes, I've done that.
But were there many accidents on the wharf when you were your time?
Well, I was telling you, I suppose about 10 years ago, the one of the worst I've seen, like being a foreman, you know, was at, I think it was at 8th Dock. They were bringing timber out. And this fellow was over the hatch. And what they should have done was they should have seen that the wharf was clear first, like, you know, which it wasn't. Of course, when it come up and there was one under the hook, they brought it back, and in the process of bringing it back, he got killed on the deck, like, you know. No, it come back and just swung back on him. He never had his back to it. Yeah, yeah. They brought it up, Tom, a pack of timber, and he brought it over. And then he went to the side of the ship and seen one under the hook, so he had to swing it back and hang it on the deck. Because he went back and looked over the hold, and in the process of bringing the pack back to land, hang it on the deck, it swung and hit him against the combings.
Worst case I had was. We're putting a big case in the wing, you know, he used to put a snatch block in and run a wire, run a rope around it and pull it into the wing with the gear. And this bloke come back after lunch, had a few in, walk between the bloody case and the ship side.
Oh,
didn't know, nobody knew he was there.
What, was he sneaking off to the wings?
No, he'd come back to work and he'd had a few drinks.
Yeah.
Nobody would have went in that position, got behind it. Because the wire could carry away, the block could carry away, anything could happen apart from that. And you pull in the case in, and there's the ship side, and you're pulling the case in like that, and then go between the two and got squashed.
All in all, I don't think, like for an industry like the wharf, the casualty rate's been very low in the years that I've been down there.
Former saved me one night, Bert. Another cable like that. I'm standing there, empty ship's hull, no air, leaning over the combings like that. Leaned over the combings like that. I'm standing there, and this is under my feet. I went to move back, and it rolled me.
Yeah,
what happened? Yeah, I was going over, off balance. The foreman was alongside of me, just happened to grab me.
Yeah.
If he hadn't been there, I was down the bottom.
Yeah.
How far down?
Oh, empty ship, about 60 feet.
Well, now, were you. How long was a shift, you know, when you were working? I mean, could you be called upon to work 24 hours, or had they gone out?
Oh, no. You was only told, if the job was, you knew that it was going to work 24 hours in such a in respect to coal, but you wouldn't do it on cargo.
24 and 36 had gone out by that time. They'd been back and had the union.
Coal was a separate section.
You could work that length of time on coal even then. Why didn't they jack up on it?
Well, they were a separate section. They had rules of their own, didn't they?
Yeah, they had their own rules and regulations.
See, that's interesting. What you were saying before was when you were all in together, the people who worked general cargo, you know, I mean, one out was all out because you were all on the same thing. Now, coal was a different section, a different skill, different conditions, and they didn't feel themselves part of it.
They had an award of their own.
An award of their own. They were almost separate in their way of thinking.
They belonged
to the
union.
Yeah, but would it be hard to get them out when you want to stop the port? I mean, if it's not a different issue,
They had plenty of men that was prepared, you know. That
even though
they
wasn't their fighters.
Oh, no, but they were still part of the union.
Yeah,
they were still part of the WWF.
They might be reluctant. They were concerned.
Oh, no.
Now, if the union said stop, they stopped.
Yes.
But would they be tend to be a one that you had to work harder to win over on those sort of things? I just thought that if it wasn't in their, you know, if it wasn't their trade, they might not be interested in the general conditions fight.
Well, I think there was a... not an antagonism, Bert, was there? There was, the bloody coalies, sir.
Yeah. They just got one of their own. They'd done that section of the work, and they found that they were all working together all the time, and they just found they were a body of their own, like, you know.
They'd go a month without a job, and there'd be plenty of work in the port in the cargo, and they would not go to a cargo job.
That's right. They were coal.
They were coal, aren't they? Yeah. Even though they might be broke or something, would they?
That's
They wouldn't go to a cargo.
They were coal. How were coalies?
Charlie Young never worked in cargo until the war. He worked timber.
Oh, I see.
All he followed was timber boats. Men followed different sections.
Yeah, so you had fellas that followed the steel boats.
Steel boats.
You couldn't get a job, like. You had fellas that followed Patrick's. And to get a job there at Patrick's or something like that, somebody'd have to be sick. And they'd say, all right, well, you know, you. And they'd pick you up and you'd go to grab a two-wheeler. And an old bloke would come up and he said, hey, don't touch that. And you'd say, well, I'm going to like start work. It's a two-wheeler. Oh, no, he said, I've been having the two-wheeler. That's been my two-wheeler for 3 years, 3 or 5 years now, like, you know. He said, you can't take that. Oh, sorry, mate.
I used to deliberately torment him if ever I got a job like that. I'd go and take their bloody two-wheeler, then they'd blow.
They were really, I see. Well, this all changed when the gang system came in, didn't it? When did the gang system come in?
In 42.
What you were talking about is before the gang system, then, this following Patrick's, following timber.
Yes, I'm talking about the pickup.
Yes.
The ordinary pickup where, you know, it was pretty tough, like, in the ordinary pickup. Like, I can remember two brothers there. One was called Pinocchio. And they used to get up on this fence where the foreman used to come up to pick up, like, you know. And they'd stick their face that close to him that, like, they were practically inches apart, like, you know, practically kissed him. Well, I reckon they might have been, sometime they might have been trying to kiss him for a job, you know. And to see this bloke with this enormous nose, like, you know, it was really, really funny, like, you know. And if he never got picked up, why did you pick? He had a squeaky voice like Pinocchio. Why did you pick me up? I'm always here, like, you know, and all this sort of thing went on, like, you know.
Okay. Now, when the gang system came in, how did it change things on the wharf?
Well, it brought, I think it brought a lot of men together.
Was it
because you had a 17-handed gang, for a start. And you had 17 fellas that were working together all the time and knew each other.
You selected your own work.
That's right, yes.
Before you didn't,
and
I said I picked up you. So.
And then you had fellas that didn't want to be in a gang, and they called them floaters.
Wasn't did you think the gang system was an improvement?
I think the gang system was one of the greatest things that ever happened on the waterfront. It brought more unity, more strength amongst the members, you know. You had 17 fellas thinking the same way, and to a certain extent, they wouldn't be all at the same mind, but they all had their opinion
experience.
Came together, didn't they? If you
they gravitated to the type of gang that it was. There were some gangs that you wouldn't go in, you wouldn't join.
Oh, that's right.
Gangs.
There's gangs that, like, if you was a non-drinker, you wouldn't go into a drinking gang, which was their business. Mm. Nobody was opposed to that if they had a drink. The gang that suited you, you'd be floating around. If there was a vacancy around in that gang, well, you'd like to join it and become a member of it.
They'd ask you if you wanted to join their gang, you know, or if there's a vacancy there and you knew somebody in it, you'd say, I wouldn't mind joining the gang. Well, the gang would make a decision themselves about that.
That's right.
Whether you was in that gang or not, you know.
Tell me, now once the gang system came in, you remember you were saying how gangs protected the weaker members.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been better then, because in the past the foreman wouldn't have picked up the weaker blokes, would they, unless they had
That's
to.
That's exactly right. That these people had to get they were on the waterfront and they had to live, and they were all, anybody ever got out of the waterfront was a living.
And half the cut.
I'll tell you an instance.
They got the blame for that, Wendy.
I don't want to interrupt.
To
give an illustration what we're talking about. I was delegate on a job with Father Feeney. You remember Father Feeney?
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a bloke just joined the job. He just joined the waterfront, and he's put down below. And what do you think they're on? On those bloody big sacks from India, you know?
Gunnies.
On the gunnies.
Gunny bags.
Well. Father, slogging work, they're standing them up, Bert, and they're putting a sling around them.
Yeah.
This is Roy Warners was involved in this. Father Feeney looks down, and he can see the tonnage is not going to come out with this fella, you know, because the poor bugger, this is his first job, and he's never done it.
Yeah.
And he went out on the wharf, and he said to Roy Warner, who's working on the Warner, you go down below and the fella come out on the wharf. And Warner said to me, oh, I don't know, Tom. I said, no, you stop where you are. So he said, I said, you stop on the wharf, I'll see Father Feeney. Oh, good God, Tom. He said, look at the man, he can't do it. I said, well, the medical bloody board said he could do it when he went up before the doctor. He was accepted and he signed a statement that he could do all types of work, you know. It wasn't a question of not helping the fellow, it was a question of a principal being involved.
Yeah.
Well, he fetched the port inspector, because the port inspector ruled against me. Well, I rung up Harry Neal and told him. He said, put Feeney on the phone, will you? He said to Feeney, the man stops where he is.
Why was that? Because he had to learn it, you reckon?
Yeah, he had to learn. Well, this is what Bert's talking about, what we're talking about, you know. Well, that fella, if he was in a gang, the gang would say to him, oh, you go out in the bloody wharf, I'll go down there. Yeah. Even as a matter of fact, Roy Werner, after we'd settled it and established that the fella was down below, Roy Werner said to me, I'll go down below now, Tom.
Yeah.
You mean you were going to organise, but you weren't going to have the bloke discriminate?
Well, no, we were establishing that was the principle, because if we let them do that kind of thing, they could have switched the gang. And this is what the gang system... Now, previously, before the gang system, he'd have just taken that fella out and put him out. You couldn't have done a thing about it.
Yeah, but he mightn't have picked him up.
Oh, he might have sacked him.
He
should have sacked him. Yeah, he could have finished him.
Finished,
he could say, well, you're finished tonight.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
You're finished. We're shortening down. And he could bring a fella from another gang that was finishing and put him in his place.
Once you put a gang on, you didn't have to keep that gang on till the end of the job. You could sack a single man or whatever you like.
No, not in the gangs.
Yeah, before the gang. When you were picking up in the
bull. It reached the stage, Wendy, with the gang system, they tried to discriminate against that, like every other thing they did. And the position came where they had to pick up gangs as they were rotated.
The board.
If you've got six gangs for a shift, you had to put the first gang at number one, the second gang at number two, so on. So that you couldn't discriminate them by putting a gang where you could get where they wouldn't suit you.
That's where Bluey's four stars come in. You know his little bookie shows?
Yes, yeah. Bluey's got